It's been a long time ago, so my memory is a little bit hazy, but I remember being behind somebody in traffic, and they were all over the place, and this is before everybody was on their cell phones. They just weren't driving right, and they're going really, really slow, and I'm in a hurry. I need to get somewhere, so I go to pass them, and they move over. I go to pass them, they move over. They got Imagine World Peace and several other things about what the world needs now is love and all these bumper stickers. So I passed them. You can tell by looking at the screen. When I passed them, their window was down. They're cussing at me and flipping me off. I think there's a problem with their advertising. I'm just saying there's something going on there. I think they forgot who they aspire to be, and we're acting out of who they actually are. In fact, the big idea for today, and you'll hear it several times, listen, church, is you live out of who you are, not what you aspire to be or imagine yourself to be. You tend to live out of who you are. Like, I know who I want to be. I do. I remember teenage Brian wanted to be the lead singer of Foghat. I would have killed it. I'm just saying. Would have been a slow ride. I would have taken it easy. Would have been a fool for the city. It would have been good. I was ready. Never got to do that because I don't live out of who I aspire to be, and I don't have that talent. I still would have done a good job, but I'm saying you live out of who you are, not who you aspire to be or who you think yourself to be. Who you are, where you get your primary sense of self, listen, church, of identity, that's how you're going to behave, and that's what you're going to live out of, and that's why it's important. We'll get there. Nehemiah is a Jewish exile. He's living in Persia. I want to remind you from last week. His whole life. So like for 146 years, the Jews have been in exile. Judah and Benjamin, we talked about this, who are headquartered in Jerusalem, have been in exile. 586 BC is when it started. 146 years they've been living in exile. They have not lived in their homeland. And Nehemiah is a servant to a king. He doesn't get to go anywhere. He doesn't own his life. He is a slave. News about the Jews gets to him. He asks somebody, and his brother says, hey, man, the Jews in Jerusalem, the gates are broken down. There is no wall. They're not a people. They're in great trouble and great shame. And he's hearing about a place he has never seen with his eyes. Grew up his whole life. Whole life. Infancy until whatever age he is now, let's say mid-30s. Has never seen this homeland. And yet when he hears this news, his heart is broken. It just sinks inside and something breaks him. And we said this, when you walk closely with God, what breaks his heart begins to break your heart. And that's where you find your calling. God, you've broken my heart for kids who need adoption or foster kids. God, you've broken my heart for animals that are treated cruelly. God, you've broken my heart for people who don't yet know you. That should be all of us. When you walk closely with God, what breaks his heart begins to break your heart. That's how you know you're walking closely. If you can callously look at something that you know breaks the heart of God and it doesn't bother you at all, there's a problem in your walk because His Spirit is living within you. And so Nehemiah, in getting broken for these people he has never met, this city he's never been to, he prays, he fasts, he confesses, and he repents. Lord, I confess for my father's household and my own sins, because I ain't perfect either. He doesn't blame those people back there that did that thing. He says, hey, I'm a part of this. I'm human too. He confesses and he repents. And so the question is, as you're looking through this, why does it matter to him so much? He's born in Persia. Never been there. Grew up in Persia. He's got a great position. He's got a pie job. In fact, the only bad day on Nehemiah's job is his last day because he is a cupbearer. That means he tests the food and drink before the king gets there in case it's poison. His only bad day is his last day. You're going to die if you drink this, and he's gone. That's it. That's his only bad day. He's got a great job. We tend to care about that which we identify with. And so this is why it's important. We tend to care about, like I care about Jamie's ride because I've met Jamie and the family. And it makes me care even more. It's not that I wouldn't care, but it makes me care even more, hearing about the struggles and knowing what she goes through and hoping that at some point, someday, some way, we find a way to cure juvenile diabetes. And in the meantime, we find a way to manage it even better. That's why I care. We care about that which we identify with. When you meet somebody with an illness or somebody in your family has an illness, all of a sudden you really want others to know. You want awareness. You start to really identify with and care. We care about causes because we identify with them in some form or fashion. We care about people groups in the same way. More so when that's our identity, our primary sense of self. Today we're talking identity. Nehemiah has every reason not to identify with the Jews. Every reason in the world. separated by time, 146 years since his people lived there. By distance, he's living in Persia. By language, he's learned the language of the Persians. He can probably still speak Hebrew, but he's learned the language of the Persians, and he's surrounded by it every day. By culture, everything is different. By his current position as a cupbearer to the king, he has every reason just to rest, live his life, and get to taste some fine wine, just like Jeremiah, and some good food. He's got every reason to rest in that identity. But something's changed. Something's broken his heart. So let's jump in. This is Nehemiah chapter 2. In the month of Nisan, insert car joke here. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. The day that he asked about the Jews in Jerusalem, and he heard that they were in great trouble and shame, and the walls were broken down, and the gates had been burned, he spent 4 months in prayer. It's been 4 months since he heard that. 4 months praying, 4 months fasting, 4 months seeking God, 4 months mourning for them, 4 months with his heart broken, 4 months of seeking God. He didn't make a quick plan of action. I'm just going to rush off and fix it. I'm going to do something. I'm going to escape. No. And he didn't just sit back and say, well, somebody will fix it someday. He did go to work, but he went to work seeking God. Here's the thing that you need to know about Nehemiah, and here's why he is going to be, and you'll see it so successful. Nehemiah does not act without praying because he believes that's where his power and his wisdom comes from. He's no different than you and me. He doesn't act without praying, but he doesn't pray without acting. And both of us, man, on both sides, we could be that person. Like, I'm just going to jump into action. Some of you are like that. And you, like, I mention a problem, you're that person. You've got like, all right, we need to do this, this, and this. We're going to need to recruit these people, these resources you need to put. And you guys are amazing. And then we've got the other folks who would be like, yeah, that's a problem. What's on TV tonight? I'll get back with it. I know I will. Neither response is the right one. The right one is, Lord, you've broken my heart. Let me seek you in prayer. What would you have me do? He never acts without praying, but he never prays without acting. And the reason is simple. God's call, this is a call on his life. God's call doesn't come with quick and easy answers. Hard situations require time if we want to see God's hand and God's miracle. We've got to take the time to actually go to God in prayer and seek him. And it's not easy. Can we look right here? Church. Can we just be honest? Prayer is work. It's not easy. It isn't. I got a million different things. I want to check my phone constantly, see how many likes I got, right? Or hates. I can thrive off of either. Give it to me. I got TV to watch. I got music to listen to. I got activities. I want to go mountain biking. It's running weather. I want to. Prayer is hard. Paul says, join with me in this labor of prayer. But the thing is, you can do many things after you've prayed. In terms of eternal significance, you're not going to do much until you pray. 4 months of praying. And here's what we do. We make just quick decisions. I hate my boss. I got to get out of there now. I'm quitting today without saying, God, what would you have me do? I can't stand this relationship. The marriage is over. I break with thee. Or I don't want to be your friend anymore. I don't like you anymore. I'm not going to hang out. We do these quick decisions. And listen, you and I can be so quick to make a change that we miss the change that God wants to do in us and through us in others. Does that make sense? Like, I can be so quick to say, I'm done with. I'm finished. I'm going to go this direction. Instead of, hey, this is what I feel, this is what my emotions are, but God, what would you have me do right now? Lord, let me get down on my knees. Let me pray. Father, what is it you want for me? Let me take a little time. That job will still be there tomorrow and the day after and the day after. Right now, Lord, what would you have me do? What's my part in this? Have I not been humble enough? Have I not served enough? Am I listening to gossip about the boss? 4 months of seeking God, waiting on God, trusting God. And if you'll remember, here's what he said at the end of his prayer. It was actually at the end of 4 months of praying. That's what we read last week. Give success to your servant today. He's been praying for 4 months. He's formulated a plan. God has told him what to do. Now he's scared. Give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, the king. He says, I was cupbearer to the king. I've got this privileged position. I get to come into the presence of the king. Here's the thing, though. Listen, if you come into the presence of the king and you don't do it correctly, if you don't come correct, he will end you. And he's a king. There is no appeal. There's no Supreme Court. There's no congressperson who's going to advocate on your behalf. You please the king or you're over. So God spoke, moved in his heart, and he's asking for a favor from a king who can kill him. When wine was before him, I took the wine and I gave it to the king, which means he sipped it first and said, "That's mighty fine wine," and gave it to the king. He says, "Now I had not been sad in his presence." So for 4 months, his heart is broken, but he's got a job to do. So you're not allowed to go to the king and be sad or not be dressed right, or you have to have a happy countenance because the king ain't taking on your emotional baggage. And if you're sad in his presence and you bring him down, it can be your life. Hadn't been sad in his presence. And the king said to me, so he's showing it now. This is dangerous. Why is your face sad seeing that you're not sick? This can be nothing but sadness of the heart. Then I was very much afraid. He's just showed what he's really feeling inside. His heart is broken for his people. And he just showed the king. This is a scary moment. I was very much afraid. Listen, you're going to have to reject the halo wearers. You know the people that I'm talking, the uber spiritual, the people that are polishing their halos and say, you know, if you're afraid, it's a sin. If you trusted God enough, you wouldn't be afraid. Shut up, man. It's okay to be afraid. It's all right. You can trust God and still feel fear over your situation. That's a struggle, not a sin. As a matter of fact, I remember where Paul said to Timothy to fan into flame the gift that is in you through the laying on of hands, because Timothy wasn't using his giftedness. And he goes on, he says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and of a sound mind." You know what he didn't say? Cut it out, Timothy. If you trusted God enough, you wouldn't be afraid. He didn't say that. Because we all struggle with emotions. We're not responsible for struggling with an emotion. We're responsible for what we do with that emotion. He's afraid. I was very much afraid. I said to the king, "Let the king live forever." That's just a normal thing that you say to a king. "Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves," this is identity, "I come from these people, lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Why shouldn't I be afraid? Or why shouldn't I be sad? You live out of who you are, not who you aspire to be or tell yourself that you are. My people," he's saying, "are not a people. They're in danger of losing their identity. Yes, I serve you. Yes, you take care of me. Yes, I get some mighty fine wine and some good food. But you're not my people, king. These are my people, and they're in danger. And so, yeah, I'm sad. Why should my face not be sad? Nehemiah cares because his identity is this. He is one of the people of God, a Jew from the promised land that he has never been to, never seen. Doesn't matter. It's who he is. And here's where he got it. Listen, his family gave him a sense of who he is. If you look around our culture, I'm not going to go far. We're going to keep a short tether on this. But you look at our culture, one of the reasons we're trying to figure out who we are individually is we're not strong families telling us who we are. "Hey, you're my son. You're my daughter. I love you. I got you no matter what. Yeah, you messed up in school. That's a shame. Yeah, you did wrong. You were wrong to do that. But I love you and that will never change." And so we're growing up trying to find our sense of acceptance and identity in a million different things in the Jewish culture, in that time, in that age, especially oral tradition. He heard all the stories of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and on. He knew about the promised land. He knew what it meant to be one of the people of God, even though he is surrounded by Persians who are pagans who don't believe in his God. He could easily have become enculturated. He could have found his identity in his pie job, and it is, in his Persian digs. He's in a palace. But he's one of the people of God, and that's what matters. His parents, his family, the Jews around him, they continually teach and remind him who he is, and that's his identity. And you live out of who you are, not who you aspire to be or think yourself to be. You live out of who you are at your core, your seat, your center. He is a Jew. He's one of the people of God. He belongs to the promised land, even if he isn't there yet. Your identity matters most. If you'll look at the scriptures, Moses is raised, just like Nehemiah, in a palace. At the age of 40, he gets his wake-up call. He looks out, and the Jews are slaves, and they're being mistreated, and he goes out and tries to save them. He does it the wrong way. Gets a 40-year penalty. God gives him a recall at the burning bush. "Moses, you're still one of my people. Why are you living out here in Midian herding sheep? I got a job for you to do." That's your identity. You live out of who you are. You've forgotten who you are, Moses. Peter forgot and played the hypocrite in Galatians chapter 2. Peter is hanging out with the Gentiles. They're having dinners together. They're eating pork. They're enjoying themselves. And as soon as some high muckety-muck folks from Jerusalem come, these uber Christians, these halo-polishing people, he withdraws from the Gentiles and acts like he hasn't been eating with them and hanging out with them. He played the hypocrite because he forgot who he was. And Paul says to Peter, you're wrong in front of everyone. And Paul says, here's your problem. You forgot your identity. I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life I live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. That's identity. Nehemiah is broken by his identity. It becomes his calling. Listen. You may be a mom or a dad or a son or a daughter. You may be all of those things. Brother, sister, friend, worker. Maybe a biker, a mountain biker, a runner, computer nerd. We love you guys. You rule the world. Don't get upset with us. If you know Jesus, you're a child of the living God, a beloved son or daughter, and nothing changes that. And when that becomes your primary sense of self, everything else changes. Everything. That's your worth. Christ died for you. That's your value. He shed his blood for you. That's your security. God's got you. And when this life ends, it's a win. That's your identity. You're a citizen of a land you ain't never seen. I ain't seen heaven. I ain't been there yet. But that's my citizenship. And when everything goes to pieces on this earth, as I see it happening, as you see it happening, as culture gets divided, as we want to fight each other, as we're being split into factions, as we deal with all the garbage and what they're teaching here and what they're... My citizenship is in heaven. I care about this. I pray. I love. I vote and all the rest of that. That's my citizenship. That's why we're not shaken, because we have a hope that is beyond this world. You're a child of God. That's your confidence. You live out of who you are. And if you want to change how you live, if you look at it, man, I'm just constantly upset by what's going on politically, or I'm constantly bothered, or man, I got patterns of behavior that aren't right. You want to change that. You seek God in prayer and you ask him to empower you and to change your identity. God, help me to see myself as your child first and foremost, as your representative. Help me to do what you want me to do that would please you and glorify you. Not religious effort. Not fake fronting. Oh, I'm good, brother. I got everything good, brother. If you're dying inside, please don't smile a big old religious smile and say you're doing great. That's just a lie. This is the one place that ought to be okay to not be okay. Would you agree? It's okay to not be okay. Now, yeah, we want Jesus to change us so we don't always stay in the same patterns of dysfunction. But, man, that is a long slog. That's a process. And it's okay in a place where you're full of similarly flawed, messed up people to not be okay. And the day this church stops being a place where it's not okay or where it's okay to not be okay, I don't want to be here anymore. Neither should you. No put-ons, no fakes, no fronting. Just honest struggles and flaws. And continually following Jesus by grace through faith. And it's by grace because we're going to have to confess regularly. Lord, I messed up. Lord, I shouldn't have said that. Lord, why did I do that? And Jesus says, I got you. Died for you. Died for that one too. Rose from the dead. You're mine. That's the king you follow. The Bible says if anyone is in Christ, he or she is a new creation. That's your identity. You may sometimes live out of the old self, but you're a new creation. The old has passed away. And the tense of that is the old has passed away and is continuing to pass away. It's a lifelong process. The new has come and is continuing to come into your life. It's a lifelong process. This is your identity. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. His beloved son, his beloved daughter. You belong to him. So Nehemiah says, hey, king, why should my face not be sad? Gates are smashed. Walls are gone. Place lies in ruins. Then the king said to me, what is it you want? Nehemiah, what do you want? He's in the presence of a king who with a word, even just a gesture, can kill him. This is it. This is the moment, the culmination of 4 months of prayer. He lives or he dies in this moment here. And you and I would say, well, I'll steel my resolve. I'll take a deep breath. I'll count to 10 before I answer. I'll hope it all works out. No. When you've prayed, when you've sought God, when your cause is right, when you know that what you're doing is the right thing and you believe God is in it, but you're still fearful, here's what you do. So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king. Now, how does that work out? He's standing there in the presence of the king, and the queen is there too. We'll find out in just a moment. He's standing there in their presence. King says, what do you want? So I prayed to the God. What do you want? Hold on just a second, king. O Lord, thou that wert, that art, that ever shall be. Father, I beseech thee on behalf of my brethren in Jerusalem that thou would give me... 30 minutes later, okay, king, here's what I need. No, it doesn't work out that way. That's a good way to get murked by the king. Just make him mad while you pray to your God that he doesn't believe in. What does that look like? I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered the king. Have you ever... Do it a couple of different ways. You ever seen a sport bike? I'm trying to use the right words here. The sport bike that you hear, and all of a sudden it's, and it's gone. You know those old blurs that you see, little guys riding on them with sandals, and you're going like, Lord, please protect them. They're going to die. Or have you ever been like at the right near the ground of NASCAR, and you can see them going around, but when they get right near, it's, those are NASCAR prayers. You know what I'm saying? Like, what do you want? What are you requesting? God, please help me. Here's what I need. That's how you do it, man. That's how you pray continually. Pray a NASCAR prayer. Pray a sports bike prayer. Lord, I need some help. Here's what we ought to do. Middle of a conversation with somebody and they're challenging you. Lord, give me graciousness and humility. Here's what we ought to talk about. NASCAR prayers are good prayers to make, especially in this culture. Yeah. This is how we push past fear instead of being paralyzed by it. We pray and we take steps of faith instead of falling back in doubt. Lord, I need your help. I've been praying 4 months. It's come down to this moment. This may be my life. Help me, Lord. And I answered the king. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, if your servant has found favor in your sight, I'm asking that you send me to Judah, Jerusalem, to the city of my father's graves that I may rebuild it. You're a conquered people, and you want me to let you rebuild the walls and the gates of your city so you can't be conquered anymore? That's some chutzpah. King said to me, the queen sitting beside him, the only reason I greened that out so you can see it is pretty good evidence that he was a eunuch. You don't get to come into the queen's presence unless you're a eunuch. How long will you be gone, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. Should take about this long, king. Go. I'm going to let you rebuild the walls to the city that has been conquered, even though you're my slave. And you got to think through all this buildup and all the anxiety and the fear. You got to think, he just, that was a good day. That's enough. I'm going to go home and like rest somewhere because, man, I am worn out, right? Bible says you don't have because you don't ask. He asked and he just got. Listen, God is saying yes through this king. You don't stop while God is giving favor and saying yes. Hey, I got the one thing. That's all. No. Don't stop now. God is working through this king. God has given you favor. The king should not have said yes, and he said yes. Keep going. There's more he needs. And I said to the king, hey, that's cool. Thank you so much. If it pleases the king, let letters be given to me to the governors of the province beyond the river that they may come, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah. Oh. Well, I'm going to have to get there somehow, king. Why don't you have your people write me some letters? Oh, dude, that's courage. Hey, king, have your people write me some. And, because he doesn't stop, a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple and for the wall of the city and for the... Hey, king, while we're at it, why don't you have a letter written to the guy who keeps your forest? Because I'm going to build my walls. I'm going to build my gates. I'm going to build my house with your lumber. Oh, big brass set of courage. Are you kidding me? He's a Jew. He's one of God's people. 4 months in prayer cements his identity. I belong to you, God, and you're a God who does miracles. And I'm getting ready to do something that if there's not a miracle, I'm going to die. You act out of who you are. He's a Jew with a long family history. He knows who his God is. He knows what God can do. In the midst of fear, he asks what you can't ask to a king you can't ask and gets what he shouldn't get. That's 4 months in prayer. That's acting out of your identity. And the king granted me what I asked for. For, because the good hand of my God was upon me. The king granted, but it was God who gave favor. That's why you seek God. And it's a moment of celebration. And it's awesome. And hey, cool, I'm going to go do this thing. And that's, man, that's amazing. It's like signing, I imagine what it's going to be like signing the contract for Parker's. Hey, we got it. Oh, crap, we got a lot of stuff to do. Right? There's going to be a ton of stuff to do once we get to that moment. And you may think, hey, man, that's awesome. Doesn't mean everything from here on out is going to be easy. You can expect opposition. He's going to get it. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant heard this, it displeased them greatly. We're going to go into this next week and the week after. He's going to face opposition from inside, from outside, from those who are working with him, who are talking to people who hate him, which is backstabbing and betrayal. It's going to get bloody and ugly, but we'll see it starting this next week. But here's the deal. Your call comes from God. He'll give you strength. He never promised that there wouldn't be obstacles. He promised he'd be with you through those obstacles and empower you. You live out of who you are. I aspire to be a lot of things. This is who I am. And in the end, you watch me long enough, you'll see who I really am. And that's true of you too. Now listen, if that's scary and you don't like it, if you tend to look away or you want to rationalize, well, it's just because they pushed me so far. You want to blame shift. Stop. Take a good look at yourself. What are the things you like and you think are good and God-honoring? What are the things that you know aren't? The answer is not to change the outward, not to do a bunch of religious acts, not to seem like you're something you're not. The answer is to let God change you from the inside out on the daily. And to find your identity as his child first and foremost, not as what you have in the bank, what you look like, what you dress like, who you're married to, who you know, what groups you're a part of, what you do for a living, what your talents are. Simply stripped bare. You're a child of the living God, and he loves you and accepts you fully and completely right this moment. That's your identity. That's where acceptance comes from. And if you haven't yet, could I encourage you to place your faith in Christ, not in religion, not in a church, not in a preacher. Oh, God, no. Place your faith in Jesus. Jesus, I believe you died on the cross for my sins. I do fall short. You died for that. You took those sins to the grave. Best as I know how, I'm placing my faith in you that I could come to know you and experience new life and find my identity, my sense of self as a child of my Creator. Would you pray with me?